accession number 27189, reel 7.
Donald Poulson, reel 7. You're saying that you mobilised in 1945 when the Germans capitulated. How many men did you have?
I think approximately 2,000. And they were well armed, rifles, stand guns, brain guns, bazookas, Piats. That's the name, isn't it?
Yeah, the British anti-tank weapons, the Piat, yes.
Yes, well, I think that's plenty of ammunition. Part of the force had got uniforms, full uniform.
Was that?
And we also got a lot of food.
Was that Norwegian uniform or British uniform?
British.
How well trained were they?
At that time, in uniform or out of uniform, all member of the home forces wore
an armband.
And your rank and so on was on this. And at that time, the Sherman had agreed to that this was the home forces were a part of Norwegian armed forces. They were not Frankeners and so on any longer. So they were going to be taken prisoner and not shot out of hand.
How were your 2,000 men organised?
Pardon?
How were they organised? What was their organisation?
They were organised in sections, platoons, in well, I can't say they were organised in companies because they were not. They had no. But when mobilized, they were in companies. Excuse me. No more battery.
How much training had they done?
Most of the men were used to outdoor life. And they had been trained in their to use their weapons. And at that time also we had what we call cells. People who were had escaped well, the NS tried to mobilize quite a number of young Norwegians at that time. So we had a few elite units, platoons, who were really trained infantrymen under Norwegian officers, but most of them hadn't been trained in. They had had some individual training, but certainly not in unit training. That was impossible.
What was the plan for their employment? You had three districts, and you had formed platoons and so forth. How were you going to use them? What was their task?
Well, let me tell you about the Rjukan area, where I was before I took over as commander. Some units were only, as I said, trained in, had their weapon training and so on. And they had some of them didn't have any special mission before they had mobilized. And then they were supposed to to occupy police station and then all that kind of thing. But that hydro, the power stations and the salpeter industry, this was different. We had arranged that you know, they produced ammonia up there, and that's quite dangerous. So we had got this ammonia in we were able to, we had people all over the who worked at Hydro. They were also a member of Milorg. They, if the Germans were coming to blow up things, they could certainly open what to call it, open the valve.
Oh yes.
So the ammonia was streaming out. They also had their weapons hidden at their working place, so they could start firing if they needed to do so. We had plans for to attack the guard sets for the Germans, and so on. We also had the plan. We were the experience from Italy in France, well, even from Italy then, in Napoli, the Germans had blown up the power stations. But when the Allied occupied the place, they found that all the generators, they were intact under all the rubble of the building.
Yes.
So we prepared to blow down the roof of the Soham Kraftstation. So if the Germans tried to do something there, everything was going down, covering the machinery.
So a sort of protective demolition.
Exactly. Protected demolition, exactly. And they had, the Germans had IKEC battery down at Hurricane. It was going to be attacked.
Was this going to be a standard infantry assault?
Pardon?
A standard infantry assault on the battery?
Not so, well, I don't think they would have been able to mount an ordinary infantry assault, but they at least were going take a position where they could use their weapons against the people, the Germans around their guns.
Yes.
But I don't think they would have been able to advance and finish it off. No. But these were AKAK people. They didn't have much infantry thing, I think. But everything was prepared in detail as far as we were able to do it. And the main thing, but after you have had all those weapons delivered by aircraft, you have to collect it, clean all the weapons, but they were full of fat. And when this was cold, it was impossible to use them. in this and get these weapons distributed.
Where did they arrive? Were they dropped onto the Hardangervidda or your area in Rjukan?
Some were up at the Hardangervidda in the Mersman area, some much nearer Rjukan.
Where were you living while you were doing this? Were you living in Rjukan itself, or were you living outside?
When I was the commander of Lamplight, I was living in Rjukan, and had my radio station further down in the valley. But when I took over Central, I moved out of the inhabited area.
In Rjukan, how did you go about finding a house to stay in?
I lived in at a family who was willing to have me.
Did you find them, or were they found for you?
They were found for me. But on the other hand, I am from Rjukan, and you people at Rjukan, and they couldn't move around in daylight.
Yes. While you were there at this time, did the Germans attempt any sort of search of the Rjukan area, or...?
Not in the Rjukan area,
no.
But in this area, and in the Norton area, yes.
Mm.
And I arrested quite a number of people.
How did you actually keep in touch with your radio operator when you were in Rjukan?
I had to go and see him.
So that meant you had to go out of the town, down the valley.
Yes.
To his.
Yes.
Where was he living? Was he living with a family, or was he living?
No, he was living alone.
Yes.
In this small hut.
Ah.
but in the neighborhood of one of those cells.
Yes.
So I was very often moving up and down the valley.
And what about keeping in touch with your local contacts? Was that by face-to-face contact as well?
At this time, the goal was to have this organization ready in the spring or early summer, rather, in 45.
Mm.
So we made quite a lot of breach on security,
Yes.
We had to. So I think if the Germans had kept going for another half a year, we would either have been rolled up or had to lay low for quite a long time. But we must be ready in early summer, and that was a correct decision, because that was when it happened.
What sort of local headquarters staff did you have to help you with creating the organization?
More or less like an ordinary staff.
This means for battalion staff?
Pardon?
Like a battalion staff?
More or less, yes. Well, I had the Sunshine, this operation is rather unique, because it's the only era where I know that people from outside took over as leaders. We were in charge. Tromsø was in charge. I was in charge. And the Milorg commanders, they went, you want to call them chief of staff. then you all, the organisation, much better than me from the outside. We are really, we worked in pairs. I think I had my men, Tor Witten, Kjell Strup, who had the area here, he had a, was a similar, was similar in the two other Avsnitt. We had the men who took care of the logistic side and so on. Single and what have you.
What was the way in which you were going to mobilise? How were you going to get the word out that it was time to form up and start moving?
We used to, I used the telephone. Ah. We had made some, at that time, I had moved down to Gransered.
Yes.
And quite a number of shortcuts was made in the on the telephone line. So I can use the telephone. And we had had priority on the civilian Norwegian lines.
When you moved up and became commander of the whole operation, who took over in the Rjukan area, in the Lamplight area?
My second in command.
Was he the local man?
The local man took over.
And you said you moved out of Rjukan. Where did you go to command the whole business?
I moved the headquarters to a hut further down in Tin, up in one of the valleys, Gøystad. No, is this not there?
And were you living on your own there, or were you part of a, were you with a group or with a family?
At the headquarters?
Yeah.
It was me. I had taken a young man from one of the cells as well, it was well, I won't call him a Batman, but all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Helberg, he was a radio operator. Skinneland, we'll call him chief of staff, if you want. Captain Norman Lynn, the British officer. Well, once in a while, other people live there. But that, I, Trinalon, Hellberg, Lynn. Yes.
And you connected telephone up there?
Pardon?
You had telephone up to your...
No.
How did you get messages out then from there? Did you use runners?
As I said, when we expected that operation would start, then we moved.
Ah.
So up there, you used... yes, you had to make contact. But we also had radio communication, wireless communication.
Within Norway?
Yes.
Yeah.
We had radio communication to the three Avsnitt.
What actually happened in the spring of 1945 when the Germans gave up, how much warning did you have that they were likely to put their hands up?
Well, that was quite a problem. We expected to get warning from England. But what actually happened, when the Germans in Norway, a little commander, General Böhme, for quite a while, he wanted to carry on in Norway after the capitulation on the continent. But fortunately, I think he was ordered from Germany, from Dönitz, to capitulate. And the British, Eisenhower, sent over a group here to Norway, brigadier, airmen, and navy men. Took contact with Böhme on how this was going to be arranged. And I must say, the Sherman when the first had decided to capitulate, every order from that group, the Allied group, to the Sherman High Command was carried out. They couldn't. And everything went on in a very orderly way. Very few instances of the German discipline was extraordinary, really. All these people in this country, they knew their families in Germany. They were bombed out, they knew nothing of what was going to happen there, and still their discipline was. And each unit, I think, each battalion was allowed to keep 18 rifles or something. The rest was.
Were there any attempts by the Germans to carry out any damage or sabotage of the?
No, not at all.
None at all.
Not as far as I know. No. At least not in my area.
What did your organisation do when the capitulation happened? Did they deploy out to the power plant and the factories? What did your organisation do when the capitulation was announced? Did they deploy to the power stations and
yes.
Did the plan work smoothly?
Yes. I can't remember any. Yes, this went very smoothly at all. And the Germans cooperated.
What happened to you after that day?
Me?
Yes.
I think I lost interest. Not after that day, but after everything had been quiet. This area was, after a month or something, was divided. So wasn't very much left of it. And I was made military commander down at Skien, the Milor district there. But that was only to. Well, as I said, I lost interest. I didn't do anything of importance for a month or two.
Was anything happening? Anything dramatic happening?
Right, my they're not engaged.
You had personal interests.
Yes. But then I to become a regular officer, I had to go to the course at the military academy in Oslo.
Krigsskolen.
Krigsskolen, yes.
What
was yes. We didn't learn much, but it was a good time.
When had you decided that you wanted to stay in the army and become a regular officer? Do you remember?
When I was 15 years old.
And you were still keen to become a career soldier?
Yes. On my mother's side, there's quite a number of officers.
Did you have to go through any sort of examination or selection before going to the Kriegsskolen?
No. Well, you had to write down what you have been doing and so on.
Yeah.
And there was a mixed lot. People who had been to the continent as British platoon commanders. People have been in England for 5 years. There are people who have been in Sweden, who have been in the Milorg here in Norway, and then we were suddenly students, and they started up as if we had just been out of school the year before. So few of us took it very seriously.
How long did it last? What was the duration of this Kriegsskolen course?
Not a year. Mm. 7 months or something, I think. Mm. I don't remember.
Do you remember what was on the syllabus of instruction, what you were learning?
That had to teach me French was impossible. No, we didn't learn much. No, we didn't. But this was impossible. It was absolutely impossible. We such a mixed lot of students. At that time, there was a Allied Officers Club in Oslo. Mm. And I was against. So, as soon as the day was over, we either went to the Allied Officers Club and I met my wife.
Do you remember if there were many practical exercises at Kriegsskolen?
None.
Field training?
None.
Just purely classroom?
Yes. Mm. Reading old pamphlets and so on.
Who was teaching you?
Pardon?
Who were the instructors?
Some of the instructors, civilian instructors, had been at Kriegsskolen before the war. And they treated us as if we just had left civilian school. I didn't remember any mathematics. I was not interested in it and so on. And suddenly we're supposed to know all that kind of stuff.
What about the military instructors? What were they? What was their background?
Some of them have been in England and had a lot of practical experience.